Hello and welcome to a special presentation from In the Money Media. This is a show for Illinois Derby Day, Sunday, April 21st. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in Gallery 55, once again, upstairs from the Brooklyn Bunker. A couple of shows on your feed that are new. We've got this one, obviously, and then we've also got one covering some double opportunities at Keeneland today. Plenty of good racing for a Sunday. Grass season has begun in New York as well. Don't have any audio content on that, but we do have, or we should have, Nick Tamaro covering that over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com as well. We've been covering in writing the weekends at Hawthorne, and to do that, we brought in a man who was very successful covering Canterbury for us years ago. He's also been doing some great work under his own banner in the podcast space and also over at YouTube. We'll bring him in now. We'll talk about that stuff in a minute as we're going to start off talking about the big contest today with our friends at Hawthorne/ExpressBet. But the man who's going to do it with us is Howard Kravitz. Howard, how are things, buddy?
Pete, I'm doing great. Very excited for Illinois Derby Day. Illinois Derby is back and a great contest today also at Hawthorne.
Let's start right there. Folks can play on ExpressBet, and ExpressBet, unlike some of these contests, you know, you don't have to sign up 3 days in advance. You can still get involved, expressbet.com/tournaments. And it's a really cool opportunity in particular, Howard, I would say, because of the rules in Illinois, which mean that all the prizes are added to the pool, and you have a chance to play for some pretty good stuff here at just this $800 price point. So a great opportunity potentially to go in double barreled and win some fabulous prizes, whether you're looking for BCBC, NHC entries with $1 million bonus or cash. I can only assume you'll be firing yourself at this coming off the heels of a big run from you in the Keeneland Friday contest last week.
Yeah, I had a great weekend last weekend. I was really happy with the second and the seventh in the Grade One Gamble. Shout out to Clay Sanders, by the way, of 10 Strike Racing, who you just, of course, had on your show for Keeneland. He finished, second, I believe, in the Grade One Gamble. So congratulations to him. Today's contest, $800 entry fee, zero into the prize pool. So you get to spend that entire $800 in your bankroll. We'll talk about the format of the contest as we go through the card, but you know, Hawthorne does a great job, and this is the first time in a while, I believe, they've had online opportunity. Usually you have to be there at one of their great OTBs to play, but they are now connecting with ExpressBet, and kudos to Hawthorne and everyone else for making this available online, and ends everyone in the Illinois Derby race 8. So just let everyone know if you're playing or you're thinking about playing, the last race of the day today, Sunday, race 9, is not part of the contest.
That's a great note. Actually, Howard, let's do the rules, because I know they're a little bit different. Let's do the rules up front here so people know what they're dealing with. If they're, who knows, maybe somebody's going to listen and decide to jump in and play. How do the minimums work in this contest? Give us a little overview of the rules.
Sure. It's a little bit of a combination of what Hawthorne's done in the past and your traditional live money contest. There's 8 races for the contest, the last race, Illinois Derby, race 8. In race 8, let's work backwards, Pete. In race 8, you must spend a minimum of $200 in race 8. Obviously, they want to have, you know, big churn and handle for that race. So you have to bet a minimum of $200 in the last race of the contest, race 8. There are obviously 7 races before that, and you have to bet a minimum of $100 in 4 of those 7 races. So people are going to have to be very careful, you know, keeping track of their mandatories, whatnot. But again, $100 minimum, 4 of the first 7, $200 minimum in the last race, Illinois Derby, race 8. Win, play, show, exact a double. They do not have trifectas today, which obviously makes things a little more interesting for the contest. You really have to pinpoint your decisions, Pete.
Yes, I think bankroll preservation going to really come into play. I like contests where they make people bet. So, you know, having to bet that 1/8 of your bankroll that many times, you're going to have to look, there's nothing wrong with the sort of Matt Miller established format, finding a spot or two and being able to push that money all in. You got to be a little careful here in terms of preserving the bankroll. Now, granted, there might be some conservative strategies to do that with dutching and exactas or doubles and trying to just keep that bankroll moving through the day. But I think it's a good format. I think it's an interesting idea what they're doing out there. Very curious. Obviously, we're not going to ask you to give away the store, Howard, but we are going to ask you to give us your you know, full on handicapping opinions as we roll through this card. What's the first race you want to talk about of these eight? Should we start at the beginning or do you want to pick up in the middle of things?
Well, let's briefly talk about a few races very early, and then we can focus on race again closer to the Illinois Derby and the Illinois Derby. Race two is, I think, going to be a big play for people in the contest because there's the number one, Aldora, who's 4-5 morning line for Wayne Catalano, by the way, is going to be a heavy play probably in doubles, right, Pete? And maybe Stone Cold Exactas, right? Trying to just smash an Exacta. I just want to say I try to be a little bit of a contrarian in these contests. I have no problem playing favorites. It's worked well for that guy you mentioned, Matt Miller. I think I've heard of him.
You've heard of him, right, Alex?
I think I have. He's a pretty aggressive guy from what I understand. A lot of people are going to play Aldora heavily, the number one in race two. I think the number four, Flathead Finale at 9-2 for Tanner Tracy, who's 23% trainer, and Jareth Loveberry, a guy that people might know from Two Fills last year, who's a solid guy. That filly, I think, has an outside shot. So I'm going to mess around with the four, maybe a straight 1-4, Dutch 1-4-4-1, or maybe even play some doubles with the four in race two. I just think there's other speed in race two, and I don't think Aldora has to win, and she's going to be 3-5 in that spot.
Interesting. So you won't be stone cold against. Your approach would be more to maybe play a horse like, if I'm getting this right, Flathead Finale, but then also cover in case the favorite is just too good.
Yeah, I mean, look, you have to win, right? I mean, you have to make money, but just very quickly, last Saturday, the Grade 1 Gamble, I don't know if Clay talked about this or how much you talked about the Grade 1 Gamble. There were two horses that were heavy favorites that lost. One was named Spalladay for Chad Brown in the middle of the card, and the other was Julia Shining. And
I bet both of them on my entry, Howard. It was very painful, but yes.
Sorry to bring that up, Pete. I didn't know that. But the point is, if you looked at the leaderboard after the Julia Shining race, Pete, the people that zeroed out, it was like the who's who of horse racing contest players. It was like a Hall of Fame, and I'm not blaming them at all. I mean, I totally get it. My point is, if heavy favorites lose, you're best going thin in that race, or you know, or trying to go another direction, unless you just think it's, you know, Zenyatta or Flightline, just the horse cannot lose. So that's just the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know what? You mentioned Matt. Matt's a frequent guest on your show. I meant to do this at the top, but we got on a longer tangent about contest rules. I want people to hear about your what you have coming up, especially in this busy time of year with the Derby. I mean, you're a very respected content creator in the space. Where can folks find more of you and Matt and the team over on your airwaves?
Thanks, Pete. Yeah, people just need to go on YouTube and in the search bar type in HHH Racing Podcast. We're also on audio platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, etc. We also have a great website that my co-host Pete Visco has put together. Just go to hhhracingpodcast.com. Very simple. Pete, we have close to 14 shows in the next 2 weeks. Most of them are live. Your obvious shows, of course, handicapping, but we also have, similar to what you folks have done, we have a fantasy draft coming up this week, but that's just for the Derby. We're not doing the Triple Crown. We also have a show coming up Wednesday called Should We Hedge? Because I don't know if you heard, we do have a pretty nice bet on Sierra Leone, which I'd love to talk to you about.
Yes.
Maybe on a separate show, perhaps. Yeah. But anyway, we have a lot of content coming up. It's going to be a lot of fun, and we're going to be very busy covering the Kentucky Derby and the Oaks, which is going to be a really fun race as well. So go to our YouTube channel, audio platforms, great website. Check us out if you're not familiar with us.
HHH Racing Podcast. Those are the key terms to find audio, written content, and video. Howard and the team do a great job. Pete, I remember he was over at the little house on the east side, and I can't remember what the hell happened, but somehow a door got, we had to like remove a door from the hinges. Anyway, I owe him a drink at some point.
But okay.
That's another story. All right, let's get back to these races. We talked about the big favorite in race two. I was not going to be brave enough to oppose Aldora. I just thought with these figures on the drop was going to be very tough. That was going to be maybe not make my last stand, but get a minimum out of the way kind of a deal and try to proceed. Where shall we head next?
Well, the next race, race three, there is a favorite I do like. The number four, Went West, at 8-5. Again, if people are home listening, wow, I was just going to tip out 8-5 shots. Not necessarily, because I don't think Eldora has to win the previous race, but I would mess around with Went West. I do like the one possibly underneath a little bit of a price. Maybe gets loose on the lead there. It's very fast from the rail. So maybe go a 4-1 exacta. But I think the 4 Went West in race 3 is going to be pretty tough coming in from some very quality races at the Fairgrounds and Hawthorne last year for Louis Roussel.
I like the 4, but I also had the 6 in the mix here. Do you give Shackleford Strong any count? This is a horse I was just thinking was in really good form and might be able to improve a little bit on the significant, to my view, at Hawthorne stretch out from 5-6. What were your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, the 6 is definitely a player in there. I thought last time didn't really have too much of an excuse, but it was 5 furlongs. They've been stretching out gradually at Hawthorne as these horses get in better shape. Not a huge fan of the jock who's 2-31 this meet, Pete. But, you know, I think the 6 can definitely get in the mix, and that's a nice horse to use underneath as well. Could upset the field if they really mix it up early.
Let's move on. Howard, do you want to go to the Illinois Breds in race 4 or move it down the line?
I'll just quickly talk about race 4. The number 2, Joe the Taylor, who's 5-2 money line for Catalano. I talked about this actually on the write-up for In the Money Media for you guys on the blog. I love when horses show the ability to change their style, Pete. And Joe the Taylor last year was pretty much an all-speed type. Last time in January at Turfway Park, for the first time ever, he was able to rate very nicely in behind. It was a bit of a cheaper race, a 30,000-hour claimer, but this state bred allowance obviously fits that $30,000 open company at Turfway pretty well. It's pretty much a lateral move. I think most people would agree with that. So I think number 2, Joe the Taylor, showing the ability to rate, if he can do the same, I think he'll be tough in race 4.
The horse I was interested in for verticals more for underneath, and they're going to need to hit up front for this one to get involved. But End the Thunder Rolls, a tough old boy, 7-year-old with 36 starts, cutting back out of routes where this horse was against the flow. You might look at this and say up in class, but according to the time form race ratings anyway, this is the easiest group he's faced in a while. This would be one, if there were trifectas, I'd probably like more to make sure you had some fours in the third spot. But I think this horse could get second or maybe even win for a hot trainer jockey combination. Was it a pace angle you had sort of against this one to not mention? Do you think I'm nuts nominating this one as a potential horse to key around? No,
I love turnback speed. And the horse, the gelding, has a lot of form going 6 furlongs at FanDuel last year in state bred company. I'm not a huge fan of the 4-36. I think this would be a good underneath horse. And look, as you know, you're an experienced contest player. You don't have to necessarily find horses on top. If you love a horse on top, you just got to find that value in second. You know, so I almost said in third, but no trifectas today in the contest. So yes, I think the 4 definitely can clunk up. I don't love that horse to win, but certainly underneath.
The 5th race has another horse that looks like it's going to be a big favorite in the form of Gunrush. Was this one you were for or against, or is this a race you weren't interested in?
I think Gunrush is going to be tough. And on my podcast last Thursday with Jim Miller, we talked about this might be the key to the whole tournament, which sounds strange, right, Pete, when you have a race 5 and I'm saying it's the key. A lot of people are going to be shoving hard, you would think, on Gunrush, including our good friend Matt Miller. I totally get it. I did pick the horse on top. He's 5-6 at Hawthorne, Pete, with a 1 second. So the horse loves Hawthorne coming from Turfway Park. There is other speed in here, especially from the outside horse, the number 8, Hot Dame, who I don't think can win. But when you've got an outside post speed and a short run of the first turn, that horse has to gun, right? I mean, doesn't have much of an option. I'm interested a little bit in the number 3. Cousin Vinny's a Canuck. Gotta love the name. This horse has form going 2 turns. Last time ran pretty well from the 10 hole. Again, that's a very tough post. Joel Burns, a veteran Illinois guy, as you probably know, and runs a lot of horses for Lothenbach Stable up in Canterbury as well, so I'm familiar with these connections. I think cousin Vinny's Canuck is interesting. 5-1 more line, number 3 in that race.
So you're calling it 3-2 in your picks, or the other way around?
I actually called it 2-3. I'd probably play, you know, some type of Dutch exacta with 2 and 3, and just hope that 2 is good enough to, you know, at least come first or second. Which 8-5 more in line, I'm thinking this horse will be even money, Pete.
We're getting down to the sharp end of this contest now. Race number 6, 3 to play. Nickel Claimers going 5.5. Some real bread and butter stuff. What's your view on this one?
So race 6 is going to have a horse that I'm going to be shoving hard in. I'm not going to look. I'm not afraid to tell people, you know, my ideas. And I have two entries, Pete. The number 8, Time Heist. Just watch the last replay. We talked about it on our show Thursday night. The horse won by 2. That doesn't even tell the whole story. I mean, it was the most confident ride you've ever seen. I mean, it was just unbelievable. The Giles, the jockey, didn't even ask really until like the top of the stretch, and then blew by the field. I don't think this field is that much more difficult. I know Giles is 1-23 at this meet. His only win, guess who? Time Heist. Now he gets to go another half furlong. The number 8, Time Heist, in race 6 is going to be a big play for me.
All right, I like the confidence. I think the setup will be there. My only fear/thought was, is this a horse who might join the party? The way this pace map shakes out, could he maybe join the party a little bit earlier, setting it up for potentially an even deeper closer? And I was thinking maybe Read the Transcript could be that horse. Of course, Read the Transcript's another one down at the inside, could join the party early. I was just thinking on pace figures, Read the Transcript might even get outrun a little bit early here and almost fluke into the perfect race setup. Not exactly a win machine, 4-40 with 7 seconds, but I thought Read the Transcript would be all of that 5-1 morning line and maybe even a little bit longer. What were your thoughts on him before we proceed?
That's interesting. I thought Read the Transcript's a little bit cheaper. I mean, last year he was in 3,200 claimers at FanDuel, while the 8's been in, you know, 5,000, yep. 7,500. I will say it makes me a little nervous to have a big shove in a contest in a 5.5 furlong nickel claimer. But, yeah, you know, Hawthorne, look, they are improving their product. You know, every track has races that are going to be a little bit cheaper than others. I mean, you see Maiden, you know, 20s or 30s, maybe, at Keeneland even. So, look, you've got to read the chart and just go with your gut. And when a horse stands out, a horse stands out. I don't care if it's a nickel claimer or a grade one. And for me, Time Heist does. But just, right, these horses are there for a reason, Pete. They're not always trustworthy. So it makes me a little nervous not to have a shove on a horse that's a little more established or more talent.
We could be following you along today. We'll live vicariously through this plan. I like what you're laying out so far. I'm just nominating a few other horses as ones that people can maybe mess around with in their exotics. But yeah, for tournament purposes, you're right. You got to take stands somewhere, and I think you're probably right that you got to go with your gut on the horses that just sort of leap off the page as winners, as the places you want to be aggressive. How about race number 7? We've got a nice looking little allowance race going. 6 furlongs in this spot, another race where I think there's going to be some separation between the presumptive favorite, Richie's on a Roll, and the rest of them. And I'm not sure who's going to be able to roll with Richie early in this spot. Not a race with a ton of speed signed on. Are you with or against that runner in race number 7?
Pete, I'm a little against. I just think the number 3, Phillipsburg, Eduardo Rodriguez, the trainer, has 2 in here. Twirling Rose is the number 2. Who's a closer, and number 3, Phillipsburg, who is pretty quick early. You'd have to believe the 3 is going to go, right? I mean, it sure looks that way. The yep. Number 5, Bisset, certainly has some early speed. The number 8, Balladine, is not nearly as talented as others, but that horse has got some speed. And not only that, Pete, it's hard for me to believe the connections of the 1, Richie's on a Roll, were using the Commonwealth Grade 3 at Keeneland as a prep for this spot, right? I mean, so Richie's on a Roll is the obvious horse to beat, and, you know, won a claiming crown race 2 back, but I don't know. I don't like the rail, especially when there's other speed, right? They're going to be pressing down on this horse. Obviously, the 1 can win. I'm going to try to beat the 1 with the 6, Silent Sunday, who has a similar profile to the 2, Twirling Roses, in that, Pete, they both want to close. But the six has maybe a little more dirtied up for him because the Bill Morey trainee has been on the poly and the sin and turf. But if you go back, the horse actually has numbers in California at the California Fairs and at Los Al that are pretty good on the dirt. So I'm going to mess around with the six. I'm going to use the one probably in second and try to beat him. Again, for a lot of reasons we've talked about. And the last thing I'll say quickly, I'm going to be going all in this spot, Pete. You have to, in my opinion, in this situation, have a nice bankroll going to the Illinois Derby, which we'll talk about in a second. It's a six horse field. You can only, you know, minimum 200. I mean, how much money can you really make in the contest in the Illinois Derby if you only have, let's just say, you know, $800, $1,000, you're breaking even. So I'm trying to get to a bigger four-digit score going into the Illinois Derby. And if anyone looks at the leaderboard, you'll see Howard Kravitz probably at zero or a hopefully a good number after race seven. I'm not going to wait for a race that I think might be difficult to make a lot of money in the contest in the Illinois Derby.
I was uncreative on top with Richie's on a roll, but I did also have Silent Sunday identified as an interesting horse. I mean, I love the way this runner closed against the flow last time in that race at Turfway. And we've seen that Turfway form stand up at Keeneland. Why can't it stand up at Hawthorne? So yeah, I think those are two pretty interesting runners there in race seven. Let's get to the big one, the Illinois Derby, first running since something like 2017 and got a field of six. Obviously you had Jim Miller on your airwaves explaining, you know, they were meant to have a few others. It's so tough. You know, I thought this was a great idea. The automatic qualifying bid for the Preakness was a great carrot. I think as it turned out, just too many races for the same group of horses jammed into a few weekends to get the big full field I'm sure they dreamed of when they put this together. But I'll say this, you got a race where you've got six horses and they're all going to be, you know, more or less in the betting. I think you're right. Coming from zero in this spot with a six horse field is going to be tough, but you're going to probably have to pick the winner if you want to win this contest. Who's your idea of the winner of this year's Illinois Derby?
Fun race, short race, and let's do this, Pete. Let's just not crap on or poo-poo the small field. I mean, Hawthorne did everything they can, like you said, and there are, you know, five of the six are legitimate, you know, Derby road to the Derby horses. So they did everything they can. I'm going 1-3-4 in this spot. I do have a little bit of intel on Real Men Violin, the number one. That I'll be happy to share, everyone. Real Men Violin is going to be ridden by Ray LaGutierrez, who did get on this horse in his last work at Churchill, by the way. And McPeak has two good works on this horse. And Ray Lou liked what he felt underneath him and plans to, you know, probably be more mid-pack and then close. Look, two back in the Risen Star, that was the best Derby prep of the year, at least in my opinion. And it was a tough spot. He ran okay. He got shuffled back. Louisiana Derby last time, I don't know what happened. I think Lannery was up a little bit closer than the horse wants to be. He was in between. And Pete, the losing by 47 lengths, finishing 11th, if you watch the replay, Lannery completely wrapped up, you know, about a third of the way into the stretch. So he wasn't winning that race. But, I mean, that line could have easily been, you know, lose by 12 lengths and finish 8th or something. So I don't know. I'm not reading too much into that. I think it's a great trip here. I think he can revert back to his form. He's faced the best horses. He's going to have to run well. The mile and eighth, I'm not overly concerned about, you know, tap it on the dam side. I'm going to go with Real Men Violin, but there is another horse in here that I think is really interesting.
Let's pivot right to there. Yeah, I was scared of Real Men Violin from just a potentially just woefully off form perspective, but you're right. The work tab says the condition arrow is pointed back in the right direction. I'm a little nervous that the one of these six I want to talk about is not among the three that you've mentioned. Is it Raquel that you want to talk about next?
It is. You know, Brendan Walsh, the last time they ran the Illinois Derby, Brendan Walsh won the race with a horse called Multiplier. Remember that horse? Yep. From a little further back. On paper, Raquel looks a little slow, right? I see 73, 75 buyers. The time form is not that far off. What I like about this horse is two things. Number one, putting the blinkers on. I'm not sure if that's to inject more speed or more for focus. But I do like the fact this horse has gone a mile and eighth twice. Should sit a nice trip. is putting blinkers on, has been working well. There seems to be a little more intent here with this horse than some others. Pete, he hasn't raced since March 1st, so he's got, what, 6-7 weeks off, which I actually like. And he's 6-1 morning line. And so Morales takes over. He's a solid jock. You're going to get a bit of a price. I'm going to be most likely, if I'm alive here, I'm probably going to use Regal in first and second and Dutch Exactas, maybe with Real Men Violin or perhaps with Woodcourt as well, the four. But I think Regal, the number three, is quite interesting here at 6-1.
You make a very compelling case for both of yours. I was interested in Legree as a horse who might just absolutely trip out in this spot, because I think with the two stretch out sprinters and Regal adding blinkers, I was thinking this could be a bit more, even with the short field, of a pace burn up than Time Form was suggesting. And I felt like watching Legree's last race, which was, you know, obviously a pretty strong race, all things considered, in the rush away, that the horse was just outpaced and sort of hustled along. And you know, it wasn't a great effort by any stretch of the imagination. But I was thinking, if they go fast, this is a horse that might just gallop along and almost fluke an absolutely perfect trip in this spot. And I was going to take a little bit of a shot. I was also thinking that you might get more than the 7-2 of the morning line on this one in a race where, you know, I think every horse, you could tell a story about every horse catching a little bit of money. I mean, they're a very tricky horse race to make a line on. But I wouldn't, in my betting, I'm not going to rule out Legree. Again, maybe one that's coming late and is more for second to potentially more likely win contender. Certainly you make a good case on Real Men Violin and Raquel for reasons they're going to improve. But that's how I was going to approach this one. Were you just worried about him being too far back?
Yeah, Legrisse was the top pick for director of racing Jim Miller, who, by the way, does make the morning lines as well. Full disclosure about that. My only, I think you very sound opinion there, Pete, and I am worried about Legrisse, especially if the pace heats up, because you know Ravenstown's going to go on the outside. I think the two is going to also be pretty aggressive from the inside, Patriot Spirit. So there, it could set up for a closer. My only concern, Pete, is where's his fast dirt form? I mean, he's only been on fast dirt twice, and it was his two-year-old year, so you can give him a little bit break for that. But since then, Stahl's put him, you know, on the turf, on the sin, and then his big win two back was a sloppy track win, and that set up for him. And as you know, or at least in my opinion, sloppy track figs on the dirt, to me, are always a little aberrational. You never really know. So I am worried about Legrisse, but it's a beautiful day here in Chicago. It's going to be fast dirt. He just hasn't done it before on fast dirt. And so that is my concern. But certainly, yeah, if he takes the fast dirt, he can win this race.
I was just seeing him as sort of unexposed. I agree, you can't really build off that figure for the reasons you said. But the fact that the two races surrounding it, or three races surrounding it, were on different surfaces, and I wasn't holding the race at Churchill against him. Thought he was maybe a bit buried down on the rail there in that one. And then as a first-time starter who didn't take money, I wasn't too worried about that Saratoga race too. Just the fact that he was talented enough to debut and hit the board in a Saratoga maiden special made me think there's maybe a little more under the hood in this spot. We'll see. We'll see how it plays out. We'll be following you and the rest of the team, not just our Chicago contest players, but strong group you guys are in aggregate, but players around the country getting involved, playing this over at expressbet.com/tournaments. But I think we've done what we can do, Howard, and we're going to get this show out there in the world now. But appreciate you very much. We're going to continue reading you over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com. We're going to be checking out all your content for the Derby and otherwise at the HHH Racing Podcast. And we'll have you back for another assignment soon, because you know no good deed goes unpunished around here.
Thanks a lot, Pete. You guys do a great job. Keep up the wonderful work, and good luck to everyone who's playing in the contest at Hawthorne. Support a track that is always supporting the horse player.
Doing a lot of friendly things. Yeah, I got to be taking a little shot with the place pick all today, too. That's to consider. I mean, the pools have been small, but it's such a cool bet. So player friendly. I'm hoping that can get some traction and we can have some fun with it. All right. For Howard Kravitz, for our friends at Hawthorne, for our friends at ExpressBet, I'm Peter Thomas for Natal. May you win all your photos.